The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRB Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program tonight. This is our first Get Back to Basics program of the fourth quarter. Donna's looking at me
that
saying,
it is.
Where's he going with this?
Fantastic.
The first what? It's, you know, well, we're winding down 2017.
I thought you were going to say October. But,
well, it's
know.
Also, it is the first
so
Money
many
Talk
things.
Program of so many things. And, of course, it gives you, the listener, an opportunity to listen to the fine and melodic tones of Donna Soa Allard, my daughter, and my partner in the world of money and finance and financial planning. And the co-host of this program every Tuesday night here on AM 790, your home of talking business and your home of money talk. Talking about money is very, very diverse. And I'm sure there are people out there who probably think, oh, well, you know, I listen to Money Talk and they basically talk about the market. We do try on occasion to talk about all the elements that fall into the world of financial planning. And financial planning has become very diverse, a very diverse planning world. And, you know, you face it, Donna, at your level. You're involved, of course, with the local chapter of the Financial Planning Association here in Rhode Island. You know, Steve Beauvais, of course, and I are our other co-hosts to this program. Are also past presidents of that same organization, the earlier phases. Actually, it was called the ICFP back in those days, the Institute of Certified Financial Planners. But same basic organization, trying to not only be a representative organization where members can gather, members can talk about issues that they're confronting in their practices and in the local markets, including the rules and the laws and everything else, but also a chance to gather what for us is very important and what for the public is important, and that's continuing education.
Yeah, the Financial Planning Association exists like many other professional organizations, whether you're a CFP or an attorney. It exists to, you know, promote the profession, to support people in the community, so to support other financial planners, financial advisors. We have members from, you know, who are with registered investment advisors or independent broker dealers, just like we are. We also have insurance professionals, some CPAs and estate planning attorneys are members, advisors from banks. There really is a greatly diversified group of people who provide financial advice to the public. And so we're provided with opportunities for continuing education and networking through monthly meetings. And something that we're also doing this month, actually, and we're very excited about it, is not so much focused on us as professionals, but focused on the community. We're having our inaugural Pro Bono Financial Planning Day, and it's going to take place on October 14th. That is a Saturday. We're having it on a Saturday, so while you all are out of work, you have an opportunity. You don't even have to take time off of work for this, but you have an opportunity to come out to the Cranston Public Library. It's in the Central Library on October 14th between 10 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon. And while you are there, you can engage a certified financial planner professional for one-on-one personalized advice free of charge. So we really wanted to create an opportunity for people who maybe have financial planning needs but have not engaged an advisor for advice because they either could not afford it, or maybe they just have one question and felt like it wasn't, you know, they didn't need to go have a whole relationship with an advisor. But they really do have a question maybe related to, you know, paying off student loans or a mortgage for their house or making a decision about the Social Security option they're going to take. It could be about anything, debt reduction, you know, cash flow management. You have an estate planning question. Oh, you know, we have this trust. What does this actually mean? Some people come to us with questions because they just don't understand what they have. It made sense when they got it years ago, but now maybe they forgot why they got it or want to make sure it still makes sense. This is an opportunity to come and ask your question. A one-on-one meeting with an advisor. And if we don't have the answer when you come in, we'll at least point you in the direction to get the answers that you need. When you walk in, you will leave with something of value. You'll leave with more information than you came in with. And
you'll be directed to a resource that does,
absolutely.
For what might be a more comprehensive follow-up.
Right. I mean, we'll give you as much information as you can while you're in there. Maybe we'll answer all of your questions. But if we can't, we'll at least let you know where to go to get your answers.
In this current world with the world of hacking and information and everything else, I guess the idea that I assume this will be confidential.
Everything is confidential. And we're not coming in taking, you know, your social security number and date of birth. This is just an opportunity for you to get some advice.
And you shouldn't feel the local chapter has done this before in the past, and you shouldn't feel that that the advisors who are participating and volunteering their time are doing this with the intention of getting your name and your number and following. It's not a source of referral for future business.
You're not going to be solicited. And in fact, you'll certainly get our name, but we're not even passing out our cards. This is an advertisement for us as professionals. It truly is, being done for the benefit of the members of our community.
Also, Donna,
to give good advice.
In a world where the financial services profession is multi-tiered now, there are so many different people that are part of the financial services profession who may not deal in the area specifically of the multi-tiered areas of financial planning. This would be a wonderful opportunity for the public to find out exactly what does a real CFP financial planner do.
You know, a certified financial planner professional is kind of like your financial quarterback. We know about a diverse number of areas because we've had some training in tax planning, insurance planning, investments, retirement planning, employee benefits, debt reduction. We have a broad range of knowledge, and then we will typically specialize in one area. But it's great to kind of meet with that financial quarterback so we can, identify areas where maybe you can be more efficient or improve upon. We can, help answer your questions and, like I said, point you in the right direction if you need, if there's more to be done for you.
Now, going in, I mean, is there a local website to the local
organization? Yeah, so go to the Cranston Public Library's website. It's, I believe, it's just cranstonlibrary.org. And their homepage is fantastic. They have a little flash video in the beginning that on the homepage that tells about all their events because they do a lot of events there. And we come up right under their events, under financial planning, pro bono financial planning day.
Is there also a website for the Financial Planning Association?
The FPARI does have a website. If you do a search, it'll come up. But it's better to actually go to the Cranston Public Library's website because you can call them and you can RSVP through their website, and they also have information about which rooms it's going to be in and a schedule of speakers, because while you're waiting to meet with an advisor, there are going to be speakers giving presentations on the basics of investing, retirement planning. I believe there'll be someone from the Rhode Island Student Loan Authority there to talk to you about financing for college, but also options if you want to look at refinancing student loans that you have. So there's a good amount of information to be had. This is completely free of cost and is meant to benefit the members of our community. So we're very proud of it and very excited about it.
Well, that's terrific. I mean, here on Money Talk program today, obviously the market was up across the board today pretty much. So we don't need to give you broad-based reasons why it's like the fifth day in a row.
I was just going to say we have a five-day streak.
It's a streak of the and of course,
Dow,
it's been a good period overall with all the volatility. This has been it's been a fabulous year for the market. It's been a fabulous year. If you are an investor, you're probably pretty happy with the way things are going right now, whether you're working on your own or whether you're doing it with an advisor. But there's ultimately reasons why. I think here the month of October historically can be a little bit volatile, but I think we're going to finish up 2017 in pretty good shape overall. You're probably pretty happy with what you've already enjoyed. Now, granted, somebody asked me this the other day. They said, what do I do if I'm really, really, really nervous, but yet I've done well so far? I said, if you're really, really, really nervous, and you've made a lot of money so far this year, and you're up 6 or 8% or whatever number you are up this year, depending on how aggressive you are. Yes, if you were really aggressive this year and have a lot of money in stocks or stock indexes, you are up anywhere from 9 to 12% right now. Good for you. God bless you. I'm very happy for you. But if you are really, 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 really nervous, fine. Get out. literally, I hate to say this.
We're not suggesting you all get out of the market.
I don't think it's the right.
Like
I think ultimately it's not the right thing to do. But you got to remember something. If you can't sleep at night, if you're making yourself sick over this, and believe me, that's really the issue. It is the emotional side of the decisions, not the fundamentals of the
what
market
you
or
are
the economy.
Talking about is risk tolerance and people's actual ability to handle risk. It's not a mathematical calculation based on your age. It's that's something to definitely consider. But what you're talking about is the sleep at night factor. And, you know, are you getting an ulcer because you worry about your money all the time?
But here's what's going to happen. I don't generally make predictions. It's not our job to be speculative here on Money Talk. But I do feel strongly, and I'm saying this for the gentleman that I was speaking with about this off air. If you are that unhappy, if you're that nervous, if you're that concerned, as Donna suggests, don't make yourself sick. You can, within your portfolio probably, if you do get on your own or working with somebody, you can move to cash, to the money market account. You'll still have your, if it's an IRA, it's still an IRA. If you have an individual account, it's still an individual account. But I'm going to almost, I'm not going to use the word guarantee, but I'm going to say I can almost assure you, if you make that choice, yes, you lock in that 9 or 10% return you've enjoyed, and good for you. It's like sticking in your thumb and pulling out a plum and saying, what a good boy am I, or gal, or whatever you are.
But at some point, you might regret that.
I think you're going to regret it. I think that November and December will surprise you. I think October may even ultimately surprise you, but you may be unhappy at the lost opportunity that being in cash will represent.
And it could be lost opportunity because the market continues to go up. Or it could be lost opportunity because, hey, maybe we do have that pullback and you feel brilliant for missing it. Now, but then you don't know when to get back in.
Now, Stephen, Donna, and I, we listen to and watch and read a great many of the same commentary that you hear wherever you are, whatever you're doing. If you do homework of your own on these things and you do watch a lot of different sources for information, good for you. There's nothing wrong with that. It helps. It helps you formulate good questions. However, we watch and listen to all the same sources. And nothing that we are hearing or seeing or listening to or watching makes us inclined to feel that it's time to jump and run. Certainly not at this point in time. If we felt that way, we would tell you that also.
We're sticking with our plan.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Money Talk program. This is Get Back to Basics Tuesday with Donna Soa Allard and Don Soa. That's me. I'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we are back with tonight's Get Back to Basics program here on Money Talk. Thank you for tuning in to AM 790, your home of talk and business. We're delighted to have this opportunity to spend your drive time home with you. Sitting here in studio with me, as usual on a Tuesday, is Donna Soa Allard and myself. I'm Don Soa. We are Certified Financial Planner Professionals, or CFP Professionals, and we're here to share with you thoughts and ideas on topics related to money. And there's so many broad topics, and usually on this program, on the Get Back to Basics, yes, we will certainly tell you if there's exciting or interesting things happening in the market. The market's doing well this year. It is up well today. Had a good day overall. The Dow itself was up about 84 points. But I'd say in general, the market was up just in around 2/10 to a quarter of a point. Well, you say a quarter of a point doesn't sound like a lot. Well, in any one day, that's a lot.
I'm saying one day, that's a good amount. And, you know, two sectors that we saw leading today were healthcare and financials. And it's something that I don't want to say we've, you know, beaten it to death, but we've been talking about healthcare and financials as long-term, I don't want to say plays, but long-term strategies to kind of augment your core positions in your portfolio for quite a while now, and they continue to produce.
And there's also prospects out there, things that might happen, can happen, potential reforms within the healthcare sector, mm-hmm. potential reforms within financial services, which may also bring down, the president may not get everything he wants based upon promises he made during the campaign. However, there are a number of things that were part of that group of promises that are also supported by other members of the House and Senate. Those things are the ones that we try to focus our attention on, identify which ones they are, so that which ones have a greater potential chance of actually being passed.
Well, I mean, there is better potential for tax reform to go through than for health care reform at this point. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a general consensus on that. And, you know, if he can, I think it was on Wednesday, he put out some more information on, remember, was it an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper was the original outline for tax reform. He fleshed it out a little bit last week.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking about the issue of tax of what's the potential within a tax reform package. In the consensus in our firm, as well as here on Money Talk, is that we don't have enough information yet, and it's likely to evolve and change over time. And unfortunately, because it's going to be whatever comes up in the end, it's going to be negotiated.
Yeah.
There are some things that seem to be central within the mix. Some of them are actually have somewhat some levels of bipartisan support on certain levels, such as changing of elements in the tax code. I mean, the Democrats and Republicans both agree.
Love to see them get rid of AMT. I mean, that would be fantastic.
That is something that's likely going to happen.
Well,
interestingly,
I mean, every year they have to put a patch, right? That was every year there was a correction on AMT. It doesn't do what it was designed to originally do. It affects far more people than it was ever intended to affect in the beginning. It was meant to be on super, super high earners to keep them from, you know, taking advantage of the tax code, right? That was the purpose.
Yeah, the other one that has a fairly good shot in this cycle of being removed is probably related to the what they call the estate tax or the death tax. And the only reason that would be on the table potentially is because when they really measure it, it has, in real effect, it has a very minimal effect in terms of how much money that it
dollar-wise,
how much it actually raises.
Because it affects so few people. However, the argument can be made, look at who it affects.
Well, they say look at who it affects because they're so-called rich people. But at the same time, the people that got really hurt by it, and of course it's becoming fewer and fewer, are people that are family-owned businesses as well as farms. And farming was the area.
Farm was the only area that I think could get some consensus from both sides.
Well, even with small, like family-owned businesses, we've seen cases where you had, I mean, over the years, you've watched, look at who the primary commercial advertisers are on television and radio going back decades, and you'll realize this, if you go back 20 and 30 years, that some of the primary ads you'd see at night during prime time were for furniture stores. They were for haberdashers or clothing stores that were owned by families. There were car dealerships that were owned by families. There were a lot of small and medium-sized businesses that did, in fact, advertise. They were your local people. They were people you knew. But for them to survive intergenerationally, I mean, when I was growing up, there was a local hardware store in our neighborhood. I could walk there from our house. And that's where anybody, whether you were a big business or a big operation doing some construction work, or whether you were a small one, I knew some fairly good-sized, reasonably good-sized builders that employed as many as 80 to 100 people. And they would also go to that particular hardware store to get supplies and different things that they actually needed. Yet I would go in there to get, when mom would say, grandma would say, go get some bulbs. We need some light bulbs for this or that, or anything along, or you need a new wrench or whatever. Those businesses have slowly but surely gone by the by, just as the big car by small medium sized car dealerships have been given way to the big superstores, because they couldn't handle it. It sort of was following what you call the Amazon theory or the Amazon philosophy,
economy of scale thing within the business.
Now some customers would say, yeah, well, we get better pricing as a result of this. But the thing is, it also destroyed local businesses and gave away local jobs, and the jobs were not always replaced within these big companies by comparable jobs.
But back to the estate tax issue.
But the issue there was, if that business wanted, if they would say the business had a son and a daughter who worked in the business, and mom and dad wanted to pass that business on to them, if it was a big enough business that it ran afoul of the limits on the estate tax or the death tax, then those children, the adult children, would have to borrow money essentially to either sell off a part of the business or borrow money from the bank in order to pay the tax, and then the debt service on that loan, which would probably be carried for many, many years thereon, the debt service would become part of the operational expense of the business, which would make the business increasingly less profitable.
These are businesses also, though, that did not engage in planning techniques that can help mitigate this, in fairness.
In fairness. But but either way, you have to look at the government is going to go after the House, the Senate, and the White House are going to go after the plan, the things that are potentially negotiable, things that where there is going to be some work. And ideally, when we come back into the next segment, what I'd like to talk a little bit about is some of the key elements that you've noticed within at least the current conversation on the tax code
Stuff that affects our clients, that affects most people listening, right?
Sort of there's the, yeah. And it, yeah, it falls in the good, the bad, and the ugly kind of mindset. So we'll designate the second half of the show for a little bit of that and some interesting kind of mind-blowing information about Social Security.
Okay.
Hey, folks.
Blow your minds.
This is Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard. Yep. Tyler, look at it. Brian just had his head blown. Well, he got a haircut. That's probably why that happened. Okay. And by the way, everybody, you're not going to see him tomorrow, but time Brian's birthday is tomorrow. Yeah, he's going to be, well, Donna thought it was 23, but it's actually 25. So, ladies, he's going to be 25, okay? So just so you do know. This is the Money Talk program. We're going to be right back, so please stick around.
Is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back to the second half of tonight's Money Talk Get Back to Basics program. I'm Don Sowa. In the studio with me is my daughter, Donna Allard. She's a co-host of tonight's program. We mentioned before we came into the break that all the talk, there's a lot of talk right now, and I imagine that that's very distracting for everyone. But the centerpiece of legislation...
It's just distracting for us. Everybody else is doing something else.
They're all doing something else, yeah. You know, whether we're talking about Puerto Rico or whether you're talking about something happening in Vegas or all this other stuff, you know. And the funny thing is, we know so many people. We have family members who were born and lived in Puerto Rico. My brother's wedding was there because he married a lovely Puerto Rican young lady. And... I don't know how many times they've been back there. Because I went to a conference down there with your mom. So, and it was very lovely. I can just imagine given the nature of the infrastructure that was there, even when we were there, it's one of those balancing acts where there's parts, and this is true of St. Thomas and St. Martin and all the other islands that you could go to, is that there are parts of the island that are lavishly wealthy and playgrounds for the rich, and that's what you see on television. It's what you see in various formats. And then there's parts of the island that are, even at the best of times, terribly, terribly poor. I was surprised driving through and seeing where blankets are cement homes with homes that don't have doors or windows, but there are blankets hanging down over them basically to keep the flies out. You know, and I said, and dirt floors in some of them. I mean, it's not an exaggeration. It's actually seen.
It's an extreme
but
example.
But it's there. The thing struck me was that you actually pretty much had to drive through some of the poorer neighborhoods of these island communities, and this includes the Bahamas, by the way. When we went down there to the Bahamas, some of the poorest areas of town to get to the lavish, the richest, most beautiful parts of the island.
They want to serve you with a good dose of guilt before you go.
I had to say, based on what I know of Puerto Rico, and a beautiful, beautiful place most of the time, I guess. I mean, but it is a beautiful place that we've been there. What they've been through and what it must really be like now is just amazing.
It's heartbreaking.
It's just heartbreaking and devastating. We were talking about one of the things within Washingtonian news, aside from all the other rhetoric, is the issue of the tax bill. Okay, they failed in their effort to push through the repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act.
So they should pivot and focus on something they can do.
Now, part of the thing that was important about the Affordable Care Act repeal and replace was that if they did it, if they were able to do it effectively, it was going to free up money that the government does in fact spend each and every year in support of elements of the Affordable Care Act. There are a number of wonderful, wonderful things that the Affordable Care Act does for the benefit of people, especially those who were ineligible or unable to purchase health care of their own for one reason or another, either affordability issues or a lack of qualification based upon pre-existing conditions. Whatever they did, they put the thing through, and the Affordable Care Act solved a number of major human interest stories, human interest purposes, but all that stuff costs money. Mm-hmm. So the principal idea of getting rid of it was not because it was so terrible and because everybody hates Barack Obama, at least the president does, certainly, but a number of people in Congress. They just wanted to get rid of it. They didn't care. It was his name on it. And if you notice, the president has done everything he could to eliminate anything the former president had done under executive laws and everything else. I mean, it's a pattern, obviously, that's been showing. And it has nothing to do with the quality or the value of any of those things.
Unfortunately.
Yes. But in this case here, understanding that it would have freed up money, if it would have freed up capital, granted, all the benefits of the Affordable Care Act would go away, and I didn't hear any efforts to replace any of them or deal with those responsibilities. But with the freed up millions or billions of dollars, that could have been used for other purposes. And, of course, that's one of the key purposes was, of course, the next big plan in the president's roster, which, of course, was tax reform. Now, simplifying the tax code to two or three brackets instead of the multiple brackets that exist in all of the confusing and complex elements.
It certainly makes planning easier, right? If you only have, you know, three individual tax brackets, the real problem at this point with it is, okay, so what? What are the income tranches? That's the big thing. They really didn't offer any concrete evidence or description of what the income tranches will be. There has been some talk. I think a number that's kind of toyed around with is that $225 for married filing jointly. So if you have household income of around, for some reason, 200 or 225 is this like magic number in Washington when it comes to talking about taxes. Yeah, it really does. And
it was always 250 or somewhere in that range. Yeah,
I guess in certain parts of the country, if you're making that, you are a rich person. But I assure you, in other parts of the country, you're not rich if you're making that. I mean,
oh, Bill Clinton joked about it. He even said, he says, I promise you, down in Arkansas, $250,000 a year, you are a really rich person.
Yeah, and you probably are, but if you live in New York City, you're really not at all.
You're not at all. Matter of fact, we know people, the wife's a dentist, the gentleman is a computer programmer.
One-bedroom apartment.
And they make $400,000 a year, and they have basically, they were trying to upgrade to a two-bedroom apartment within their co-op, and it was going to, that one extra bedroom, which was going to be like 430 square feet, if that, was going to upgrade the size of the apartment, the cost to about $1 million. They said the apartment they were in was valued at $1.5 million. Of course, that's for tax purposes, right, within the city. But they said at this level, we're not saving any money. We earn $400,000 a year, and we are not saving any money.
At any rate, the reason I bring this up is because we're talking about the idea of three tax rates, with that middle one being 25%, right? So if you make if 225 is the cutoff for that tax bracket, you know, if you're making a little bit more than that, if you're making, you know, like around like 300 or so, well, you end up losing because now you were making you were paying, what, 33? Would that be the 33% tax bracket? Well, now you're going to be bumped up to a higher tax bracket. So there are some people who are definitely going to be, just by making a little bit more, you're bumped up to a higher tax bracket, where if you made a little bit less, you come down. So there are winners and losers across a very thin line.
Now, granted, the problem has also been that if you look back over a 30-year period, there have been little incremental changes to the tax code where there have been increases at certain levels, like an investment tax, which is, they'll say, and 3% level. They make it sound like it's not a lot of money. But what ultimately ends up happening is the person who's going to end up paying that particular tax is also probably in the 39.6% bracket on other things. And then there's also other, you're paying FICA. When you come right down to it, there are people out there who, you know, work hard, and they work hard to earn a good living, but they may be literally paying out, if you look at their gross income, they may be giving away half of it, 40 to 50% of it going to taxes. It's problematic.
One element that a lot of people are not going to like is the idea of possibly removing the deduction for local and state income taxes. So right now,
that's a big deal.
This is a big deal that affects a lot of people. And one article I was reading talked about it as a blue state problem.
Uh-huh.
And so talking about the idea that, you know, Trump's base typically from those states is not going to be as broadly affected as, you know, California, New York, certainly, because they have a high city tax in addition to their state tax. But you know that when you do your taxes in, you know, January, February, April, you go in and you have that statement that shows what you paid in, you know, your state income taxes and city taxes, and you can deduct that. So if that goes away, you know, that it, obviously it hurts higher income earners more because you're it's a larger, you know, a larger percentage.
Well, you know, but in fairness, they were also talking about eliminating the interest deduction on real estate, on your mortgage. Now,
I don't see that going anywhere.
I don't see that going away.
The lobbyists from, I just don't see that.
Well, this
going
is cool
anywhere.
Because I was actually reading an article from Money Magazine, and they said they were talking about why it is so difficult to eliminate loopholes mm-hmm. or anything that's considered a loophole.
Lobbyists.
And they said that the reason is that each of those loopholes is also a windfall for someone.
Of course.
Usually fiercely defended by congressional members representing millions of their constituent businesses and households. And, of course, there are lobbyists getting paid a lot of money to get in and defend them. And while corporate loopholes may draw the biggest ire from a lot of voters because they say, well, that doesn't affect me, corporate loopholes. Individual taxpayers are by far the biggest beneficiaries, though,
of all of these federal
tax loopholes. Some taxpayers may not even be aware of the breaks that they're getting. The costliest loophole, for example, is the tax treatment of health insurance benefits paid by an employer, which can represent a sizable portion of a given worker's overall compensation.
Can you imagine if you were suddenly taxed on that?
Because that benefit is not taxed as income, the Treasury loses out on billions of dollars every year. So it's interesting that that might be one that they would go after, but the overall impact. Here's that case where the President and Congress would sell the idea in terms of trying to sell it to the public with what we'd call not fake news, but misinformation. Misinformation. Because, in other words, telling you something
misleading statements.
Something that is difficult enough to understand that they think the majority of their base will accept whatever I say about it. And they don't realize when they start talking about, oh, this is going to be a tax on the wealthy. Well, so they make it sound like, well, that affects the wealthy business owner. No, it doesn't. It affects if the business owner is getting a tax break, in other words, if that amount is not treated as income to the corporation, then they are more inclined to actually offer health insurance through the company. And that's a major, major benefit to who? Middle America. Yeah. A lot of people who are just rank and file working for the company, they say, you know, another one good solid reason for being here. And some people, as you know from the clients you've talked to, have actually stayed at jobs that they might have been thinking about leaving.
People will absolutely stick with an employer because of the benefits offered versus going somewhere else with a higher salary but lesser benefits. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, it's your total package. And that's a big part of it.
Now, another thing that affects people's taxes, and again, I guess a lot of people think this is once again for the wealthier class, is the issue of individuals who file their returns as either an S corporation, small business owners, or a partnership or whatever, but they're looking to actually make they're talking about making adjustments there in setting like one tax bracket. One more favorable potential tax bracket?
Yeah, the new proposal calls for like a huge reduction of the top corporate tax rate down to 20%. That's like a 15%, you know, savings. And it also, and it's not just, you know, your C-Corps, your large businesses. Smaller businesses, like think of your sole proprietorships. You know, think of Rhode Island in general, which is a very boutique business community. Lots of partnerships, S-Corps, sole props. They would be taxable at a maximum tax rate of 25% as opposed to like 39.6%. That is an enormous tax savings on that pass-through
income. So yes, I will benefit from that as the owner of a medium-sized local business with 7 or 8 employees. We're an S-Corp, as it is now. And yes, the revenue passes through when our CPA firm does the taxes.
K-1.
It comes all the way through the system like that. And yeah, and if done as an individual tax return on the way things are at this point, maybe there are going to be occasions to pay based on how things are structured where we could be up in the 33 or 39% bracket potentially. But here and there now saying that we will benefit. The top would be 25. But is it possible, the question is, I guess, that is it possible that there are individuals who earn high levels of income who are maybe in the 33, 35, or 39% brackets who might try to direct a fair amount of that income to make it look
income?
To make it look like it's business income.
No, it is not possible. It will definitely happen.
It'll definitely happen. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program. We will be right back with more Get Back to Basics with Donna Allard and Don Sowa. Thanks a lot. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we are back with the last segment of tonight's Get Back to Basics program on Money Talk with Donna Allard and Don Sowa. All right, Donna, one of those interesting things that pops up as you go through your research, and of course, it deals with topics that we do talk about with our clients and certainly talk about here on the program from time to time. People will call up or email us questions, and it deals with the decision that they're making about Social Security, retirement income, and when are they going to take it.
I've had people specifically engage me for one-time planning to specifically look at their Social Security options and help walk them through their planning decision, because they know that the timing decision on Social Security, when they take it, and frankly, until a year ago, there were more options if you were a married couple. There were more options, to figure out what would be the most advantageous claiming strategy. But this is a decision that affects you for the rest of your life, because this is a guaranteed income stream from the time you take it until the time you die. And chances are you're going to live to be old. I'm not going to bet on you dying early, unless you have some major life-shortening health issue. I'm going to bet on you living to be older, which means you need to plan for an income stream to support you for a long time. And the earlier you claim Social Security, the earlier you are locking in a lower benefit for the rest of your life. It isn't like once you reach your full retirement age, it suddenly bumps up to whatever that primary insurance amount is. It is not. You permanently reduce your benefits when you claim early. And there are very good reasons to claim early. I know that people have very solid reasons for claiming early. Some people just flat out need the income. They had to leave the workforce early because of a health reason, or maybe they lost their job and couldn't find a new one and said, you know what, I'm ready to be done. And they need that income from Social Security. So there are good reasons to claim early. But when you do this, you need to realize that depending on when you were born and what your full retirement age is, either 66 or 67 or somewhere in between, you are permanently reducing your benefits by somewhere between 25 and 30%. That's huge.
So the difference between taking it at 67, which would be somebody was...
So if your full retirement age is 66 and you take it at 62, you're reducing your lifetime benefits by, it's by 25%. If your full retirement age is 67... then it's being reduced by 30%. That's big. That's really big. It's also big because you want to consider the fact that if you're a two-income household and you each have a benefit, if one of you dies, you get to keep the larger of the two benefits. Well, if you're going to only have one benefit to support the household, you want to make sure it's as high as it could possibly be. So when we work with clients, we very often talk about waiting till you're 70, or at least one partner in the couple, usually the higher earner, waiting till they're 70 to claim so they can get the largest benefit possible.
Now, you were talking about the importance of the benefit size between age, say, 67 and age 62.
Right.
But you're also mentioning that the difference between 67 and 70 is likewise a big difference.
Between your full retirement age, either 66 or 67 or somewhere in between, and 70, you receive an increase per year of 8%. Now, that's simple interest based on your primary insurance amount, but that's 8% per year. There's no investment that's going to guarantee you an 8% per year increase. So that's really important. So I know all of this, and I talk about this with my clients all the time, and so do you. So I was really surprised to read that in a report by the Center for Retirement Research, which is through Boston College, more Americans start Social Security at age 62 than any other age. So more people are deciding to lock in the lowest possible benefit. 42% of men, 48% of women claim at 62, and more than half claim before reaching their full retirement age. That's a lot. That's a lot. If you're claiming because you have to, and there are, you know, many reasons why you may have to, I understand that and certainly couldn't argue it. However, if you're one of those people who is doing it because you think that Social Security is going broke, let me tell you, if you're 62, you're getting what it says you're going to get.
Right.
My benefits will be reduced. I'm 36. Your benefits will not be reduced.
And I was actually talking to a client on this very same issue. And the client, if he went right to full retirement age, which is January of his age 67, he was going to get $1,800 per month from Social Security retirement. If he chose to take it at 62, he was going to get $1,200 a month. Think about the differences here, folks. $1,200 versus $1,800, $600 per month difference. Now, if he waited instead of at age 67, went out to age 70, he was going to get $2,400 a month. So this is literally 62 versus 70 is double.
It's a significant
$1,200 a month up to $2,400 a month by having had the ability to not claim, at a specific age by not taking it. But as you're saying, is that people make the choice to go at 62 far more than we'd realize.
They do. And, you know, what's really scary is that there is a significant portion of the population where Social Security makes up far more than half of their income. For the majority of the population, your Social Security benefit makes up more than half of your income. So it's really important to maximize this benefit in ways that are within your power.
When the government first created Social Security back during FDR's administration, they were actually talking about the expectation that Social Security would never really be more than, say, one-third of an average individual's retirement income, and it has morphed way out from
those
numbers.
And it was also meant to support you for like 5 years, so yeah. You were supposed to die.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, if you're retiring at 65 and then you're going to be dead at 70 or 72, that works out fine. Social Security was actually considered to be a survivor benefit for my wife because they assumed that she would outlive me by 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and she'd need some money.
And by the way, one of these days we'll give you I think even Nathan Beauvais, who likes to look at the financial history, will go back and actually look at what was being honestly discussed and debated during the creation of Social Security, because I've heard that story before and it was really interesting. But again, for another show. Hey, Donna, thanks so much for joining us tonight here on the Money Talk.
Always glad to be here.
Get back to basics. Delighted to spend your Tuesday drive time home with you. By the way, Steve Beauvais is on vacation this week.
He'll be back tomorrow.
So I'm going to be back tomorrow. I'll be doing the show all week long, right through to Friday. And then Steve will be back next week when you and I...
We're at our national conference. We're going to go get smarter.
Go get smarter, and we'll be out next week by the same. Hey, folks, in the meantime, you have a great evening.